I'm an addict and my name is George. And now let me give you all a hand, because without you, there would be no me, at least in this fellowship. And I just got to thank the Chesapeake Potomac region for allowing me to come in and share my experience, strength, and hope on this 5th and 11th tradition, maximum service to the still suffering addict. I can only give you my experience, strength, and hope. If you want opinions, go on the internet or whatever you like. But that's all I can do is come with what I've got. I'm a real lover of the traditions. Those are primarily shunned in most of the meetings that I've seen. Not necessarily their working, but their discussion and education about them. A lot of people will learn from the newcomers how to practice traditions when an old timer will come up and say, "Why don't you give that newcomer a hug?" And what kind of message are we trying to carry? The fifth tradition and the 11th tradition and all the traditions and the steps, and this is as close as you'll get to an opinion from me. They're just God-given, beautiful things, treasures that are all connected, and we're all connected in a living fellowship, and we're all connected with our experience, strength, and hope. And the spiritual principles are the things, the ties that bind us together, which is what the traditions speak of. The fifth tradition talks very simply. The traditions, although they're about the groups, are a lot about unity and unity of purpose. And each group has but one primary purpose. One, uno, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Addicts who are still suffering might have a good amount of time in the fellowship, and they might be clean all these years and have their outsides looking real sweet, but inside they're just a teapot ready to explode. And no place can the therapeutic value of one addict helping another come into play when the group can open up its arms to the newcomer. Effective groups that I've seen over my years, I've seen groups that didn't welcome the newcomers with open arms, and God knows what happened to those newcomers. And is that carrying our message, a message of hope, promise of freedom from active addiction? If everybody's too busy with their little clicks and their little cell phones and their little this and that, and trying to make that last business deal, oh, that's another tradition. I might talk about that later. But the addict who still suffers doesn't get to hear the message, and that addict might die. And all the residual things that happen with all the people who suffer because that addict suffers or dies, it's because we can be too busy and too self-centered and too self-absorbed to be concerned about the newcomer stepping in and to make him or her feel welcome. To provide an atmosphere of recovery, to allow meetings to start very, very correctly, start on time, finish on time. It'll give the addicts that are new especially a sense of hope, because here they're coming into something that's got a structure. The only thing that the newcomers and the people off the streets know is they have no structure. And now all of a sudden, here they are, and they're being put into a structure of just where there's a certain way we do things. and they're made to feel welcome. They're made to feel at home. And that's going to actually connect to another tradition I'm going to talk about later. That's the second part of this. The fifth tradition allows all of us to become the therapeutic value. And as the literature reads, that's without parallel. Without parallel. Man, that kind of speaks for itself, doesn't it? And one primary purpose, the traditions going in order. Step one talks about NA unity. We have a unity of purpose to carry the message. Tradition two, we're united, one vote, many voices, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Another singular in tradition three, the only requirement for membership. That's a singular only. If I'm only looking at him, I'm only looking at him. If I'm only looking at you, I'm only looking at you. But I'm looking at y'all because any one of you might have the key to something that might help me release some of the pain that I have. Autonomy, auto, thinking about another thing that involves singular. And freedom. We have our choice. One of the therapeutic values I learned coming in here, there weren't too many meetings when I started in this fellowship in Baltimore. There were only around 27 meetings for the entire week, and only had the basic text, and that was in its infancy. We had a few IP pamphlets, and that was about it. That we were all just kind of going together. We were just huddling together, basically, to keep out of the storm that we were all going through. And to just find freedom from that is just the stone-cold bomb. Imagine that just nothing but just things pecking at us, and we could come in and find a measure of relief, a sense of peace, just for a minute. That would be the promise that kept me coming around, because I don't know anything else. I love to gamble in my life, but this is one gamble I'm not going to fade. You can take that one to the bank. It's often said that that people forget how they got here, and they have an awful hard way to find their way back here once they leave here, because that little thing called ego comes up. When the group's together with that unified purpose, we can help somebody. We can become available. We have other traditions that keep the groups focused on their primary purpose. We're going to have traditions that are going to call for us to form service boards or committees so that the meetings, like a regular home group, can send a committee member and that they can form service boards and committees. That's another tradition. So when I look at these traditions, we still have that unified purpose, just to carry that message to that addict who still suffers, and the group is going to be an important vehicle of this. And in the end, we just keep on rolling through these traditions, and they have so many just beautiful, unique things. The fifth tradition, the spiritual principle of integrity, responsibility. Just think of home groups that I've seen in my lifetime that have died because home group members got complacent and they developed, I got mine, now you get yours, sucker. And that turned off the newcomer, and those meetings folded. They folded, and that's a sad thing to see, that they more reflected the personalities of the members that were there instead of the principles. And when groups start to be associated with a specific person, it's no longer we're not trying to carry the message. It's maybe Rich is trying to carry the message, or Dan is trying to carry the message. You know, and this is the we. I saw that out on the sign, and I still have to believe that. My own take on this one is simple. The fifth tradition is for the groups to carry the message, and all we can do is try, because the attraction that the newcomer will find, is the fact that we've actually embraced some spiritual principles, and we have something to share. And that's going to attract this newcomer to stay once he gets. A lot of people get pushed in. You know, they get pushed in by a lot of different ways. Marriages, courts, you name it. Not too many people were just watching Wheel of Fortune and decide, I got a drug problem. I think I'll go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I don't think so. But when they got there, they were scared, they were confused, and somebody came up to welcome them, and they became attracted to what they were looking at. They saw people that had spiritual principles working in their life. The fifth tradition is about the groups showing those spiritual principles in their walk, that they're keeping the atmosphere of recovery fresh, that they're welcoming newcomers with open arms, that they're consistent, that they're consistent with their purpose, that they have that integrity, that responsibility. Home groups have failed because members with substantial clean time have disappeared, and they're too busy with money, property, or prestige. They're too busy to stop by and share anything with anybody at any level. And that selfishness and that me returns, and that's a cancer to the groups that I've seen fold, and I've seen many of them fold. That spirituality that's present. This is the bomb. This is the product that sells itself. We don't have to go out and promote this. We don't have to promote anything. This takes care of itself. If we just simply do what we can do to carry this message to that addict who still suffers, we could start to become an attractive force and not a distractive force in their lives. That they can actually gain some hope. I've seen many, many people that have come in and have just been turned off by the experience, and their minds get closed because they can only maybe put their experience on one meeting or two meetings, and out they go. It would still be their choice to come back, but they would be a little less willing to come back the next time. And again, you know, we talk about these principles in motion, which is service. The fifth tradition and the 12th step are saying the same thing. One's for the individual, one's for the group. When I'm a member of that group, I have to act as a responsible member in good standing, as an old friend of mine says in Narcotics Anonymous, that I have to be there, I have to be available to serve and to show that gratitude. Otherwise, I can slip off into the sunset with that same selfish attitude that brought me in here in the first place. I can't say enough about what this fellowship gave to me. I do know this, that I could have read all the books in the world, But until I got to see it in action, I was definitely from Missouri. I was from that show you state. Show me. Don't tell me how to do this. Don't give me your opinion. Show me. We have committees that are involved, including public information. And that's always a we project. No singular member, including myself, however good my intentions are, can ever speak for the fellowship, because that would then just be my opinion. And it wouldn't be in line with what we're trying to accomplish here, which is to stay attractive. We can hold on to that singular anonymity all day long, like it says in It Works How and Why. Really another fabulous book that came years and years into my recovery when it got here. A lot of you members that are newer and have that, all this literature and these battalions of people that have extensive experience with the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 service concepts, you've had the way paved by people who always sign at the bottom of the page in loving service. And when I talk about in loving service, it is a labor of love for me to disagree with somebody without being disagreeable, because I'm a very, very egotistical person. And when I practice the spiritual principle of anonymity, I have to remember I'm only just a part of the whole. In my past, I did everything in my power to keep myself apart from everybody. I either went to the penitentiary or I just stayed locked up in my own little hell. Oh, they call that the triangle of self-obsession, but that's another topic for somebody else at another time. But I know for me that when I'm practicing these traditions, I'm always doing it with the we in mind. Once I get too opinionated, people that are confused, lost, can get even more confused, and I'm not gonna look to distract anybody from the primary purpose that we have here. The spiritual foundation of all our traditions, oh, that's tradition 12, is that anonymity, because ego is going to keep God out, easing God out. And I can get real, real caught up in the fact that I know all this stuff, I have all this experience, and I'm all that. And I got a disease that'll keep me in denial of what the solution was to be. Was to listen to the newcomer, to feel that pain, to be involved with something that meant something, to be a part of something that stands for something. Not just standing for me in some little corner someplace, looking to stay apart from everything. I can be a part of the we. This in tradition 5, this tradition 5 and 11, allow us to keep life simple and to stay an attractive force. And I've mentioned about 10, 12 connections at least in that. And if we really comb this, and I had 3-4 hours to talk to y'all, we could really get into the nitty-gritty and separate this the wheat from the chaff. But then that would be the perfectionism in me and the me that doesn't really want to share. He wants to just interject it, sometimes without that person's permission. In one of the steps, it says the temptation to give advice is great, but when we do, we lose the respect of the newcomer. That's one thing. I need newcomers. I always need to see that fresh pain because I don't ever want to forget where I came from. I don't ever want to forget the fact that this is a program that taught me how to forgive myself. How? Through a therapeutic value of one addict helping another. I got myself in a spot where I had no peace. And when I got here, I went years without ever finding peace, although I held on to abstinence. I still was crazy as a bed bug because I hadn't been able to forgive myself for the past. And I always had that one foot in the past and the banana peel on the other foot leading me back to insanity again. And I don't want that. I don't want to be back in places that the mailman doesn't even want to stop. I don't want to attract somebody's attention to me on a front page article that I'm part of a drug sweep or involved in a killing or it was me that got murdered, which could also be the case. I like to stay in the background, and the people that are in the service here are the true people that are in loving service. They come down here and they share their time. For my view, that's our most precious asset. Anybody that's rich can throw money at this, but then we only allow us to pay our way. Oh, it's another trick. I can just keep connecting. Just give me enough time. I can connect all this in some way, like Perry Mason. I'll connect it up, Your Honor. Well, I can say that the only connection I have is a connection with the people in my life that are in this program and in this process, the God of my understanding, and the people that mean something to me in my regular everyday life. And take a look at this. This wasn't happening 24 years ago. I can't believe what I'm seeing, and I haven't been one to attend many conventions. This is only my second one in 23 years since a world convention way back in 85, 86. That was my last convention. I love this. This is what it's all about for me. Again, I'm grateful to Colin and for the trusted servants that asked me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope on this beautiful topic. And hopefully you got something out of this meeting. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, George. At this time, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Moji.
I'm an addict. My name is Moji.
Hi, Moji.
Do I look fat?
That's good.
Thanks for your share. I heard a friend of mine led a workshop yesterday, and I want to follow the same path that she kind of took as far as qualification and all that. I believe that everybody who walks in and put their foot across the threshold of every Narcotics Anonymous meeting, for whatever reason they come in, whether it's court-ordered, whether it's spouse-ordered, whether it's they're tired of Wheel of Fortune, or whatever the reason is, that person would be qualified and would be welcome in our meetings. They welcome me. I came in here, my first NA meeting I was sent to, actually to my first NA meeting, because somebody in a mental hospital after a heroin overdose had mercy on me and suggested that I could qualify for one of these meetings. So I came to one to my first NA meeting. I was broken, confused, hurt, clueless, angry, hateful, hopeless, and faceless. And I had no interest of what this program had to offer, and let alone any interest in what your traditions were. But I just showed up because it was a cold night, and somebody had told me that, you know, there would be coffee in these meetings in an hour of a warm place. And I came in. You know, every tradition was taking place as I put my foot in that meeting. The tradition of the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using was alive and kicking. Because I remember I've been wanting to and had a desire to stop using since I was 14. I always wanted to stop using, always. Well, not in the beginning when I was smoking weed and, you know, and hanging out and partying and all the other things, but, you know, the party was over when I was 15 or 16 when I found myself in a bathroom with blood all over the place, when I got caught by my mother with heroin in the book of my social studies. And I saw the pain that I created. I really wanted to quit using drugs. And I had a desire since then, but I just didn't know how. So I made myself available to everything that was put in front of me. I mean, I was open-minded enough to go to a psychiatrist. I was open-minded enough to go to a psychologist. I was open-minded enough at the age of 17 and fake an ID to go to a methadone clinic. I was open-minded enough to try different treatment centers. I was open-minded enough to sit up and listen to counselors telling me that I had a problem. And I knew I had a problem. And I was open-minded enough to even try for a week or two not to use drugs. I was willing enough that I told on myself and I told my father that I was, I mean, I told him how badly I was jonesing. And I turned into that little girl in Exorcist movie. You know, I was just like, you know, the only thing that I wasn't doing was throwing green stuff in my father's face. I was open-minded enough to let him chain me to bed to go to work so I wouldn't have to have a chance to go out and use and put the phone far away from me. And I've managed to drag the bed and turn the bed around somehow to go through the frame of a door to make myself go, make it to the phone to call somebody to sit, bring me the dope and throw it on the balcony from four stories behind, or below rather. And I was open-minded and I was willing. I had a desire to stop using, but I couldn't. I came to the point that I was convinced that I cannot quit using drugs, no matter who says what. I've been around the world. I've tried every possible program designed for drug addicts to quit using drugs. And I couldn't. Maybe the people who did were better than me or worse than me. There are people like me that I see on the street all day long. We can't do it. And I was also feeling as a victim that because of my condition, until the rest of my life, till the day that I die, I have to pay some prices. I have to get beat up at times because I'm a drug addict. I have to be treated like shit because I'm a drug addict. I had to be belittled because I'm a drug addict. I had to go to jail sometimes because I'm a drug addict. And I was convinced, I was okay with all that because I had come to terms with it that, you know, I'm a drug addict, like, you know, like I'm crippled and people abuse me. So what? This is a hand that I've been dealt with and I'm gonna, you know, live this life till the day I die. And these people don't understand. Hopefully one day In this world, people will have some mercy on drug addicts like me and treat them well. Look, you know, we have become politically correct with a whole bunch of other conditions. And it didn't happen. And so anyway, going back to my first meeting, Third Tradition was alive. They accepted me because only thing I had was a desire. I had a desire to see what this thing is all about. I had a desire to stay clean till I find the next $20, which was okay by you people. Fifth Tradition was completely kicking. Attraction. People were standing outside of a meeting and they were funny. They asked me questions. They asked me my name. They were interested in me. And some one of them even asked me if I had a place to live. And I said, no. And he said, okay. And then instantly my dope fiend kicked in. And I said, this program offers a place to live? Or a job, maybe? And he said, yes, we do. And I said, what do I have to do? He said, just go with me. This guy had never seen me in his life, never. I just walked into this meeting, and then I think he saw the pain in my face, or I wasn't all that attractive. And nothing else I had that would make anybody else interested in me. And in fact, everywhere else that I've ever been, people would lock their doors and roll their windows up and then tell me, actually, what do you want, and leave. And or in their stores, if there were two people, they would borrow 10 other eyes to watch me. So I sit in the car with him, and he told me we're going to his house. And we did. And I spent the night on his couch. You know, at that point I was 24 years old, and I had been living on the streets for about at least 5 years around the world. And I had been doing everything under the sun to get to my next fix. I don't need to mention, you know, what I had done, we all know, and everything that I could. That night when we went to his house, I sat on the couch and he went to the bedroom. He said, well, I'll wake you up tomorrow and we're going to go to the same meeting tomorrow night. I just sat on that bed for about an hour or so, looking around. It was a beautiful apartment. Back then, at least to me, because I've been living on the street, anything would have been beautiful. Coming out of, under the trucks and abandoned buildings. And I kept thinking, I wonder what he wants. And I'll never forget that feeling. Every time I talk about it, I think about that feeling, I get tears in my eyes because really I felt it. I wonder what he wants. Who would want to take me home? And then a minute later, I thought, whatever he wants, he can have it. It's a warm bed. And he never wanted anything. He just woke up the next morning and gave me breakfast. He said, there's a newspaper. Go look for a job. I'll see you tonight. We'll go to the same meeting. I went to the meeting with him again that night, and there were more people that were attracted, or that were interested in me. Hey, you were the guy from last night. You're our newcomer. What are you doing? Did you find a job yet? Do you have parents? Do you call them? Do you have any charges pending? You hungry? You want to hang out after the meeting? Want a cigarette? Attraction. I mean, they made me attracted to them. They didn't come to me and start talking about, this is our traditions. And read this. This is what we're about. And we love you. Bye-bye. See you tomorrow. You know, these things made me really attracted to these people because I'd never seen anything like this before. Never. I mean, I've been friends with people that we did everything together, everything. We robbed people together. We became co-defenders. We didn't snitch on each other. You know, we took charges for each other. But, you know, I never had the best interest of that man in my life, in my head. Because I was waiting for an opportunity to just look back, stab this motherfucker over a half a bag of dough. And I got those opportunities. I did it on my girlfriend. I mean, whoever woke up first had the wake-up shot. And then the other one would wake up and be like, where is the bag of dope? I don't know. You had it. You know? I'm dope sick too, baby. I've never seen anything like this. Yet I thought, wow, I won the lottery. This is great. I stayed clean for about 3 or 4 months. And I'm a dope fiend. Everything I ever do, I want a reward for it. You know, on my, I don't know, 90th day clean, I've been looking on the calendar. On that day, I'm going to somehow celebrate, and I'm going to save enough money, maybe half a paycheck, that do something, maybe buy myself a carrot cake, or do something. Celebrate, man. I have never been clean 90 fucking days on my own. On the 90th day, I go out there. After the meeting, I didn't tell anybody anything. It was a Friday night, and everybody asked me, Moji, you don't want to come hang out with us? We're going to meet, we're going to movies. We were still going to movies on Friday nights. We're going to go eat. I had my mind set to go out and celebrate for my 90th day clean. And I wasn't going to go shoot dope. I wasn't going to go do anything really, really bad to fuck myself up because, hey, this is not what we're about. All I want to do is go get maybe a six-pack of near beer. just to, you know, just like an imitation of a celebration. And I did. I mean, I never had fun with near beer, never in my life. I mean, in fact, I think that was the second time I ever had a near beer. I drank the first one, I drank the second one, I was asking myself, what the hell am I doing this for? I went out to the same store in the corner, I bought a six-pack of beer, brought it home, drank one. And my addiction came full force. I'll never forget that day. It was my first relapse. An hour later, I was uptown looking for, I can't believe it's not heroin. And that's not good. A dope fiend wouldn't go for that. That's like asking for a beat bag already. So I got high. And like everybody else, I just wanted to do it one time. One time. And it didn't work. And I kept coming to meetings, and I didn't tell anybody about it because I was so afraid that I didn't want to betray you people. Because you were so nice to me. You've done so much for me. You gave me something that all my life I've been looking for. And this is the first time. I mean, I betrayed my mom and dad and everybody else many, many years. And I got used to it. I was so good at it. But you people were different. I couldn't lie to you. I mean, you were just like me. You had quit using drugs. And I couldn't. So I failed you people. And I lied for 2 days. Until somebody confronted me, and they knew the 2 days that I was lying, that I've been using. Because you change instantly, I did. Your whole demeanor changes. The first thing that goes in my body, I just instantly become a different person for some reason. And they had noticed it, and we do. And the thing that I thought was so easy to achieve, which means getting clean, which happened to me so easily this time. Somebody took me home and got me clean. I went to meetings. I became one of the new people. I became the drop in an ocean of recovery, and blah, 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 all that stuff. Became a prince of my area. Everybody was so interested in me. I was like a poster child of my area and my meetings and all that. I thought I could get this anytime I want. And it didn't happen. And I became one of those people that we all see in our meetings, kept coming to meetings all the time, nodding, hi, every single time, every 2 weeks I showed up. Is there anybody new here? Anybody has a desire to get clean and blah, blah, I would pick up a white key tag. And some clapped, some didn't, some rolled their eyes. Some placed bets on me that, you know, he's not gonna last. You don't know him, I've known him, he's been coming around for 4 years. The longest he's ever had was 90 days, and that was the first time he ever got clean. He's not gonna make it. But the third tradition was still there, and nobody ever told me not to come back, because every other place, you know, the jobs, if I stole two times, I was permanently unemployable by that company. I was permanently disowned by my family. I was permanently on the neighborhood watch in some relatives' neighborhoods. I was permanently barred from a whole bunch of Safeways and Giants. Permanently. They wouldn't even temporarily tell me not to come back here. Even when I was nodding in the meetings, they just looked at me and laughed, like we do. Oh, look at him, huh? And again, fifth tradition was in full force, attraction, again the same thing. You know, it's amazing. How does the message get carried? On the billboard, we love you. Welcome to the newcomer. Bye. Does it get carried on our t-shirts? If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. Does it get carried in our bumper stickers? It gets carried by us individually. We carry the message. We, you and me. How do we carry the message? We become the message. I have seen some messages here, and I want it to be like. And on the other hand, I've seen some messages that I didn't want to be like. Because I used to argue with my sponsor, the same guy who took me home. Used to argue with him on the way home from the meeting. Man, I don't want to be like these people. Did you hear what he treated me? Did you hear how he treated her? Did you hear what she said to him? All that, I was judgmental. I still am. But I was watching people all the time, how they carry the message, how they walk the talk. And you know, I was just judging him for it. And he used to tell me, you don't have to be like him. Where does it say in our basic text that everybody has to be the same? Or you have to be like this guy or this woman? One day you learn how to be you and like that person. And I strive for that for years and years and years. I still go back and forth with it. But I know it's possible because I've seen it. I've lived it. I've felt it. The fact that I can like myself. I can look in the mirror and be okay with who I am and be actually proud of myself. So we become the message. Message of hope. Message of faith. Message of love. Message of unconditional love. No matter how many times you go out and come back, we still love you. They did it to me many, many, many times. They love me. And you know what? At times I used to feel like this whole thing is a fake. They do it because they have to do it. Until I felt the same feelings towards some people when I became friends with some people here, and when they left and when they came back, I really missed them. When they came back, I really felt that love. Thank you for coming back. I really, really miss you. And the tears. You know, at some point, I heard some the main speaker last night said something that really stuck by me. That at some point in my recovery, I became one of those tradition police guys. I hate to call those people Nazis and all that, because I hear a lot of Nazis burn people. We don't burn people here. Tradition soldiers, tradition police. Yes, but, you know. I would hear 4,000 different good things in the meeting, but so all they, one had to do was break something slightly against a one tradition I would go on. And at some point in my life, some point in my recovery, I've come to the point that, you know, I totally respect the tradition working people. I just try to do mine to the best of my ability. Try to be the part of that we that we are talking about. Try to have the love to the still suffering addict as they had for me when I was suffering. And I like what this gentleman said about suffering doesn't have anything to do with time or clean time. You know, in our program, the newcomers, sometimes they come in and they get lost and we don't get attention. And they stay and they don't. And the old timers, when they're suffering, first of all, the ego prevents you from asking for help. And you remain suffering. And I've seen old timers use, I've seen old timers jump, I've seen old timers get on medicine due to their depression, due to their not being understood, a lack of love. I've been there a couple of times myself, and it's not easy to ask for help when your ass is on fire with a little bit of time. But the answer to that is freedom is possible. Same basic message. You know, the freedom, freedom, freedom. Freedom from myself. Freedom from my thoughts. Freedom from my defects. Freedom from my shortcomings. Freedom from the places that I put myself, and I create these things as dope, as an enemies against myself. And there's help available. The same steps that got me clean, the same steps can keep me clean, the same steps can make me feel better about myself and you. The same traditions that you guys applied for me to stay here and feel home, the same tradition I can apply with you guys for myself to make this a better home for me. So, I can go to meetings and keep my head up. You know, when I was using drugs, toilet became the most, the safest place in the world to be. You know, it's a really fucked up thing for somebody with some clean time to have toilet the safest place to be. Because of shame, because of guilt, because of all the other feelings that I'm suffering from. And some clean time. That I can't keep my head up in the meeting, that I can't look in other people's eyes in the meetings. Or I can't look at myself in the mirror. And there is help here. And it's my responsibility, as it is, I can't say it's yours, but you know, that's what makes we, you, me, him, her, together, we make a little meeting. To make it attractive and safe for every addict, regardless of their clean time, newcomer or not, to come in here and feel okay. And at some point, you know, the way the message gets carried has become more important for me than what the message is itself. You know, as if like, we shouldn't have done this, we shouldn't have done this. I mean, it's just, okay, let's talk about it, let's vote on it. And in the meantime, the suffering addict standing on a corner is getting totally ignored. I've been guilty of it myself. But the basics, I've learned from the beginning that if I follow the basics, what got me clean in the beginning, I can remain clean and I can be service to others. And beyond all that, I'm rambling, and I'm really glad I'm here, and thank you guys for listening.
I want to thank George and Moses for sharing. Thank you very much. Thank you. We still have some time. Does anybody with a burning desire, somebody that wants to come up and share with us? Please, this is the time. We still have about 10, 15 minutes. Does anybody like to come up and share with us? Okay, thank you. Good.
All right.
Hey. Carlton. Oh, yes,
man. Yeah, hello, family. My name is Carlton.
We got a meeting going on. Meeting going on. Meeting going on.
Hey, my name is Carlton, and today I know that I'm an addict. And I know that I cannot use successfully. I didn't take a hit today. I guess the question is, what's in your wallet? However, you know, I was listening to the last gentleman that shared, right? And I have a son, he's 37 years old, and he's on it, right? I mean, he's on it, like. And I had him, I let him live in my house, and you know, he would bring people in and out of the house all night long, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't leave my wallet laying down because my credit card would get missing. And just, you know, police coming around the house all hours of the night because he's involved in something. And about a month and a half ago, I just bought a brand new computer, and I came home one evening, and he had taken the computer, parts loose from the computer, and he was down in the family room, and I said, man, what you doing? He said, oh, Dad, I'm just working on it. Brand new computer, right? I don't even have the damn thing hooked up. Anyway, you know, me being an addict, I knew something was wrong with this picture. The next day, the computer was gone, right? And so I called the police, and I talked to the people in the fellowship, and they said, call the police. You know how he was saying, we don't snitch and we don't call the police and all that. Anyway, I called the police, I took a suggestion, and come to find out that the computer was down at a pawn shop down in Laurel, Maryland. And so he had pawned it for $200, and so I went to court the next day, and I tried to get a stay away order. The judge told me that I couldn't do that. He said I had to get an eviction notice, right? I mean, eviction order. And so I came back 2 or 3 weeks later, and I got the eviction order, and I gave him an option. I said, man, you're gonna have to leave. You know, I'm tired. I can't put up with no more of this. And anyway, he went to Avery Road. He stayed up there for 30 days and came home, and he's supposed to be going up to West Virginia to a year program up there. And he said, well, Dad, let me wait until I can get in. You know how we do, man. We go to con, you know what I'm saying? And I fell for that shit. Anyway, I let him stay, and a week turned into a month, and a month turned into